Chapter 42. It was a 42nd turbolift drop to the Soto's floor in their Eastport residential tower, and 40 seconds had never seemed so long. Leia pulled her lightsaber from the thigh pocket of her grease-stained flight suit, and Han checked the power level of his famous Blastech DL-44. Given the tower's unobtrusive but watchful security department, Leia felt certain there would be a pair of guard droids and a sentient supervisor waiting with a retina scanner when they stepped out of the lift. As long as Han didn't start a firefight, that would probably even be a good thing. It was always smart to have a little support in situations like these. "Can't this thing drop any faster?" Han grumbled.
"They don't put acceleration compensators in turbolifts," Leia reminded. "Be patient, Han. We'll be more useful without our knees in our chests."
Han was silent for a moment, then asked, "Did Adarak say they were on the way, or already in the building?"
"On our floor," Leia said. "He said they were already on our floor."
With its rare red ladlums and milky larmelstone floor, the Soto atrium appeared as deserted and placid as the first time Vicky Shesh had visited it. Instead of ambling casually by as she had before, she walked straight toward the cul-de-sac, the looming figures of an entire Yuuzhan Vong infiltration cell following close on her heels. Dressed in the blue jumpsuits of the Municipal Health Bureau and wearing conspicuously similar Ooglith maskers, Vicky's companions looked more like a squad of sextuplet assassins than a vermin control team, though it hardly mattered. Droids were not capable of making the leap of thought necessary to interpret the odd similarity as a threat, and there would be no sentience awake inside to notice. 10 minutes ago, she had walked past and innocuously blown an ultrasonic whistle, causing her census lug surveillance bug to self-destruct and release an invisible cloud of sleep-inducing spores. By now, everyone in the Soto apartment, including Ben Skywalker, would be slumbering peacefully. Vicky had almost entered the atrium when a sudden rustle broke out behind her, and she turned to find the infiltrators opening their collars to reach for the Nulliths, concealed beneath their jumpsuits.
"Not yet, gentlemen."
In an attempt to keep the security system from identifying the stress pattern in her voice, Vicky spoke in a bare whisper.
"We don't want to alarm anyone."
"But the spores—"
"Grow ineffective after 5 minutes, or so I was given to believe."
Vicky was not at all happy about having her judgment questioned by a male inferior.
"It has been 10 minutes."
"They settle to the ground after 5 minutes," the leader corrected. His name was Inko or Eegko or something similarly odd. "If they are stirred into the air again—"
"We'll mask when we are inside, Inko."
Vicky pushed the leader's hand back beneath his jumpsuit, then tipped her chin toward the servo-droid GL-7, standing patiently outside the Christasteel door.
"If the greeter droid sees a vermin control team approaching in Nulliths, he'll have tower security down here before we cross the atrium. We must disable him before revealing ourselves."
The leader considered this for a moment, then nodded to his warriors and removed his hand without the Nulith. "Ingo Dar," he said. "I am called Ingo Dar."
"Of course you are."
Vicky rolled her eyes and turned back to the atrium.
"Follow me, Ingo, and do only what I command."
Though Vicky was about to expose herself as one of the most notorious traitors in the short history of the New Republic, she had not bothered to mask either her appearance or her voice. A thorough analysis of the security data would penetrate such a disguise anyway, and she knew from her spy in the security department that any attempt to avoid all the tower's hidden holocams and microphones would be hopeless. Besides, there was a part of her, a big part of her, that wanted Luke Skywalker to know who had taken his son. No one could cross Vicky Shesh and hope to escape the consequences, not even the Master of the Jedi. There would also be consequences for Vicky, of course. She would become a hunted woman and a reviled traitor, and her whole planet would be stigmatized by her betrayal. But not for long, she was certain. Since losing her seat on Nirmak,
She had actually expanded her value to the War Master, recruiting a network of spies who believed she was merely working to regain her lost prestige. She had provided him with not only the secret of the Jedi shadow bombs, but also the technical readouts of the gravity projectors aboard the Mon Mothma and the Ilagos Akla, and the disposition of the New Republic hyperspace mines now being laid between Borlias and Coruscant. Savong La knew that in commanding her to distract the Jedi in this manner, he was forfeiting his most valuable intelligence asset, and Vicky could think of only one reason for him to do that. Savong La was coming to Coruscant, and soon. As Vicky approached the door, the GL-7 swiveled its smiling face in her direction and made a show of scanning her features, though she knew that it had already done that from 20 meters away, when she stepped onto the hidden pressure pad at the entrance to the atrium. She smiled warmly and slipped a hand into her stylish hip pouch, reaching for the powerful two-shot hold-out blaster she had hidden inside a scan-proof cosmetics case. "Senator Shesh, how kind of you to call." The GL-7 radiated electronic enthusiasm. "C-3PO informs me that the household is napping at the moment, but he expects them to awaken shortly. If you and your friends care to wait, he is prepared to offer refreshments."
Refreshments?
It was hardly the type of greeting Vicky expected, but perhaps the droid's programming had not been updated since her retirement as the chair of Cellcor. Certainly, Leia Solo would have been eager to offer a warm reception to the senator in control of the refugee effort's purse strings. Leaving the holdout blaster in her hip pouch, Vicky said,
"Yes, refreshments would be nice."
"C-3PO is waiting for you inside." The Christasteel door slid open. "Please enjoy your visit." Only her experience as a politician kept Vicky's jaw from dropping.
"Thank you. I am sure we will."
Hoping that the infiltrators behind her were not doing something foolish like reaching under their jumpsuits for the amphistaffs twined around their waists, Vicky crossed the threshold and stepped into the foyer, a domed atrium similar to the one from which they had just come, though much smaller and even less grandiose. To the left, a large double door opened onto the apartment's skyway balcony, where, 2 meters below, a hover sled from a popular airbed vendor was waiting to provide a fast escape. The Solo's Golden Protocol droid appeared from deeper inside the apartment.
"I am C-3PO, Human-Cyborg Relations."
"The whole galaxy knows who you are, C-3PO," Vicky remarked dryly.
"How kind of you to say so, Senator Shesh."
C-3PO gestured at a set of poof couches arrayed around a potted ladlum, then said,
"We have been expecting you. Please be seated, and I will take drink orders for you and your friends shortly."
The droid's tone was so pleasantly matter-of-fact that the significance of what he had said did not strike Vicky until he had turned away and vanished around the corner. The infiltrators instantly began to rustle beneath their jumpsuits for their newliths, but Vicky pulled her holdout blaster from its hiding place and started after the droid.
"C-3PO, you were expecting us."
"Why, yes, Senator Shesh."
The droid reappeared instantly, his metallic hands grasping a delicate Vor's glass orb spattered on the inside with some sort of organic material.
"I was given to understand that this belongs to you."
Still struggling to make sense of the situation, Vicky leveled her holdout blaster at the droid's head.
"Stay there."
C-3PO stopped.
"Oh, my."
The glass sphere slipped from between his hands.
"Is that really necessary?"
Vicky had time enough to draw one breath before the orb shattered on the tile floor. Then a small, gray-skinned alien slipped past the droid with a T-21 repeating blaster in his hands. He was, she saw, wearing a breath mask. Vicky fired once in his direction and heard the first infiltrator thump to the floor. The alien fired past her twice, and two more warriors crashed down. When a fourth fell, Vicky realized the situation was hopeless and turned to flee. Even if any of the Yuuzhan'vong remained conscious long enough to don their Nuliths, they would never fight past the Nogri. As she approached the skyway balcony, the double doors slid open automatically, and a second Nogri dropped onto the floor. Vicky took two more steps and loosed the holdout blaster's last bolt. The shot missed, of course, but it did force the alien to waste an instant pivoting away. That instant was all Vicky needed. She raced across the balcony and hurdled the safety rail blind. With any luck at all, the hover sled would still be there, 2 meters down. The crook of Luke's arm felt strangely empty without Ben there to keep it occupied. At the oddest times, he found himself holding his hand in front of his belly, and his elbow slightly out from his body, rocking from one foot to another and humming softly to himself. Sometimes, such as now, it even seemed to him that his ribs were warm where his son would be pressed against him, or that the air was sweet with the smell of the milk on Ben's breath. Sensing a sudden silence in the air, Luke looked up to find the three women in the room, Mara, Danny, Silgal, studying him with knowing smirks. He felt himself blush, and knew there was no use denying that his thoughts had been elsewhere. "Well, nothing else seems to work." He shrugged and smiled sheepishly, then looked through the transparisteel viewport at the writhing mass of tentacles in the nutrient tank. "I thought we might as well try music."
"Sure you did, Luke," Mara said. "I'm sure that every Yamask war coordinator will be mesmerized by Dance, Dance, Little Ewok."
"Why not?"
Silgal asked.
"It works as well as anything we have tried. We know they communicate through gravitic modulation, but there must be something in the wave pattern we are missing. Whatever we try, it fails to answer."
"Fails or refuses?" Luke asked, studying the creature more closely. "We keep talking about Yamasks like they're animals, but I'm not sure. What if it doesn't want to answer? If they're smart enough to run a battle..."
"Then they're smart enough to avoid helping us," Danny said. She shook her head wearily. "For every step forward..."
Luke's comlink buzzed, then Mara's. Mara got to hers first.
"Mara here."
"Everything's fine, but Leia thinks you should know we just had a little excitement here." Han's voice was tinny and scratchy, a result of the relay from Eclipse's comm center being split between two comm links. Luke turned his off, and the voice sounded more like Han. "There's nothing to worry about." Luke and Mara looked at each other. Then Mara demanded,
"What do you mean there's nothing to worry about? If there was nothing to worry about, would you be calming us to say there was nothing to worry about?" "Vicky Shesh paid us a visit," Leia said. "She had a squad of infiltrators with her."
"They were after Ben?" Luke asked. "That's how it looks," Han said. "Adarak and Miwal took them in the foyer. The Yuuzhan'vong are either dead or on their way to an NRI interrogation facility."
"And Vicky?" Mara asked. "She jumped off the balcony," Leia said.
"She didn't fall far," Han added. "She had a delivery sled one floor below. NRI is tracing it now."
"But it won't take long to find her,"
Leia hastened to add.
"Within the hour, every voice scanner on Coruscant will be trying to match her print."
Luke and Mara looked at each other again, then Mara shrugged.
"So who said I was worried?" Mara asked. "If anyone in the galaxy knows how to deal with kidnappers, it has to be Han and Leia Solo."
This drew a laugh from both Han and Leia, who had almost lost count of the number of times their children had been abducted.
"But you two stay put," Mara ordered. "No more sneaking off on secret reconnaissance missions when you're supposed to be watching my son."
"Firm that," Han said. "I could use some time on the couch." After they clicked off, Luke could still sense a lingering uneasiness in Mara. He waited until they had stepped into the frigid corridor. Eclipse's heating system was again performing below specifications, then spun Mara around and zipped her thermosuit to her throat. "It isn't easy being here," he said. "Not with the Yuuzhan'vong after Ben on Coruscant." Mara managed to smile.
And with everything so quiet right now.
You could probably take a few days. Ben might like to see his mother, too.
And his mother would like to see him,
Mara said. She fell silent, considering, then shook her head.
But she also wants to protect him, and the only way to do that is to keep the Yuuzhan Vong away from Coruscant.
With all those refugee convoys disappearing from Raltir and Rinnal, this is more than just quiet. Luke nodded.
I feel it, too.
He took her hand and started toward the hangar caves, where Corran Horn wanted to show him a supplemental targeting system being installed on the XJ-3s.
This is the dark before the Nova.